Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chai Chat. We are so excited to be back on the air. Thank you very much for all of you who have been loyal listeners and checking out our archive shows from our first season. We've been on a bit of a sabbatical, but we are back on live, and I have a whole new crew. We've got new music, new graphics, and a brand new co-host, Mary Rockenstein. And she will talk a little bit about herself in a minute, but we want to introduce you to the new theme of the show, which is creating new worlds at work. This is a show that will talk about the world of work, and it's about transforming the workplace. And we hope to involve you in this transformational process. We're going to talk today about the particular topic of leadership and what is enlightened leadership. My name is Victoria Battier. I'm a life coach and business consultant, and I actually help individuals and businesses and management teams to be who they really are, to find their own authenticity, find their truest intentions, and to begin to manifest being in alignment with those as they operate their business and hopefully be places where people earn joyful livelihood rather than go to work. And I want to introduce you here to my awesome co-host who will be with us on every show, and her name is Mary Rockenstein. Mary, would you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure, Victoria. Thank you. Well, I am a John Maxwell certified speaker trainer coach, and, you know, I'm really passionate about leadership. So when we talked about reviving Chai Chat and we talked about, you know, the focus of it, I was so in from the very beginning, because it is really important to me that we start to grasp the fact that we really need to be shaping tomorrow's leaders today. And, you know, Victoria, I think when we get into some of the content for today, it's going to be so obvious that we have a lot of shaping to do. You know, we're not exactly, I think, in the state in most organizations from an engagement standpoint that we should be in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the concept of leadership is so wonderful because it's so broad. We can talk about leadership in business, which we will be doing, and workplace, but we can also think in terms of leadership in our social groups, leadership in our athletic or, you know, games, sport activities, leadership in our families. Leaders are leaders, and good leaders are often too few and far between, but I want everybody out there to think in terms of what we're talking about is applying to every aspect of where you know leaders to have appeared in your life and where you would like to have more good leaders appear in your life or bring out that aspect in yourself. So this is a topic that really applies across the board, right?
Oh, it does. And, you know, we're using the term, we haven't even really defined what leadership is at this point. But, you know, I would also offer that I completely agree. Leadership is not something that is unique to the business community or the world of work. You know, leadership is needed in all aspects of society. But I'll also say that there is no one-size-fits-all for what does a leader look like. I believe in my heart that every human being can lead from where they stand.
Absolutely. And this show is really about asking everyone who hears us to do that very thing, to start thinking about being a leader from where you stand, because leadership involves choice, it involves consciousness, and it involves making informed choices. And everyone has the ability and the responsibility to make informed choices in their lives, hopefully toward the betterment of their lives and a more joyful, engagement at work and otherwise. You know, one of the things we were looking at, you know, different things that we could talk about today for our kickoff show, and you know, we really arrived on, you know, the concept of poor leadership is really bad business. Mary shared a statistic with me that you kind of knocked my socks off. Gallup polls, you know, are showing that 70% of workers are not engaged at work, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know. What are they doing, staring out the window? You know, what's going on here? Mary, yeah, I mean, that's an alarming statistic, actually.
Oh, it's alarming, it's shocking, it's disappointing, it's disturbing. And, you know, probably 10 years ago there was a term that was starting to appear in the human resource circles, and it was a term called presenteeism. And, you know, that's the old, you know, the lights are on but no one's home. And so it really lends itself to the fact that, wow, 70% of our workforce is in some presenteeism. They're coming to work, but they're not giving 100% of their energy, their effort, their initiative, their passion. You know, what's going on?
Well, you know, one of the things that occurs to me at first, and that's why we really need to dig into this topic, because when you think about it, almost everybody out there currently or at most points in their lives spends most of their day at work. So if you think about this, you know, most of your life, you know, you are, you know, not engaged in what you're doing. First of all, you know, that's alarming in terms of, gee, what kind of work product is coming out of people who aren't engaged? But also, what, you know, and how do we all suffer from that? But also, what part of people are they leaving at home? The best, most bright and creative, inspired, skilled, amazing parts of them are not coming to work.
No, they're not. And, you know, I think when we start to talk about this, it can sound very soft, right? It can sound very feminine. Well, of course, you two women are going to be talking about engagement. But I tell you, and again, the guys from Gallup have really nailed it. Jim Clifton has had a white paper posted on Gallup, and I took a look at it. This was so disturbing to me. He calls leaders of these organizations that have unengaged associates, he refers to them as managers from hell. And he comments that these managers from hell are creating active disengagement that is costing the U.S. an estimated $450 to $550 billion annually.
I
fell off my chair when I said, can you imagine?
Wow, and that's a lot of zeros and commas.
So if, you know, if you're listening today or listening to the archive of this broadcast, you know, if you're working for a company that is contributing to that, what piece of that is affecting your bottom line? I mean, this is, Victoria, this is a huge topic, because not only does disengagement affect one's health, and it does, and we'll talk about that in later shows, I'm sure, but look at what it's doing to the bottom line. And to your point, you know, if you're a company that's building widgets, what's the quality of that widget if it's being built by someone who really doesn't want to be there?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And if, you know, you start to think of all these numbers and you think, okay, well, where do they drizzle down to? Okay, this may be a number and it's esoteric and it's out there and I'll forget about it, you know, once I hit my lunch hour here. But the fact is, you know, if you take a look at your taxes, you know, your, you know, what it is that hits your bottom line in terms of your own household, all these numbers personally affect all of us, because they have to do with our economy. And while that sounds like a big word, it trickles down and affects every single one of us in our standard of living. So these are important numbers.
Oh, they are. You know, and there is, of course, there's always a silver lining, right? And, you know, so the silver lining is really the flip side of that, too, because can you imagine what would happen if we doubled or tripled the number of engaged associates in the workplace?
Yes.
Because, you know, the engaged associates, they're the ones that are bringing great ideas. They're doing the most to create that great experience with your company's customers. And they're the ones who bring that entrepreneurial spirit and energy to work every day. So can you imagine what the workplace would look like if we, instead of focusing on, oh, we only have 70 or 30% engaged, what if we doubled or tripled it? What would that look like?
Well, I'll tell you, it might look like, and this may seem like a simplistic comparison, but, you know, you never have to bribe your kids to play. Because it's intrinsic. It's natural. They're interested. They're inspired. They're curious. They're creative. That is what work should look like. In fact, when I work with coaching clients and I work, you know, with businesses, you know, I the word work is so maligned because it kind of smacks of toil and angst and all of this stuff that really does not sound like a fun time. But if work was a place where you could go to co-create mastery and amazing products and awesome service and wonderful relationships with other people in who you work with and who you serve, now all of a sudden nobody has to prod you to turn your switch on to not be a robot anymore, because it's intrinsic. It's kind of like when kids play. In my mind, when you work, it should be the same kind of experience as when somebody sits down to an exciting creative project. And with that kind of framework, and it's not pie in the sky, because there are businesses that work that way. There are industries that lean more in that direction. And I really believe that this show, hopefully, is going to be an inspiration, information, of course, but an inspiration and a wake-up call for people to realize that they don't have to change the world. They can change their world, and the world changes.
That's right. And it goes back to that original statement that I made, where you can lead from where you stand. One person can make a difference. You know, who was it? Gandhi that said, be the change mm-hmm. you want to make in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really believe that those are not just words on paper. Those are words to live by. And, you know, I think that, you know, as we talk about this as well, I hope the listeners are starting to think about and companies that they have either worked for or heard about. You know, the flip side of this too is that organizations who have been recognized, you know, as the best place to work. These are companies that understand the importance of associate engagement. Generally, and there are statistics that bear this out too, they outperform their competitors. You know, again, it goes back to there's so much value in creating a place where people can come in and have fun and find that joy, because you're right. How many hours a day do we spend in our jobs or at our jobs in work? And if we can't, you know, find ways to fulfill that joyfulness that is going to lead to great work and high levels of engagement, then what a sorry state we're going to be in.
Well, and that's the thing, motivation only takes you so far. Inspiration takes you forever. It just goes mm-hmm. and goes. All right, so we're looking at, and so I know some of these sound like high-minded concepts, and of course, in what I do with folks, you know, I'm looking at these concepts, but let's get back to sort of the nitty-gritty as people are going, okay, so how do I start putting the wheels to the road here and see what this means for me? We're going to talk a little bit now about, you know, most people talk about the word management, and, you know, we're going to look at concepts like supervisor, manager, leader. You know, what do these words mean, and how is your company operationalizing, these roles? And is it advantageous, or is it undermining the effectiveness and the cooperativeness that's going on and the collaboration that's going on in that company? When we were talking about these concepts for the show, I asked Mary's my resident expert here, and I said, hey, you know, what do these terms actually mean? Because they're used, you know, managers used a whole lot more than leader or supervisor.
Yeah, you know, there are so many titles, right? Titles drive me crazy, because a title doesn't mm-hmm. really often describe what it is that person should be doing. And, you know, as an example, somebody could be the manager of public relations, or the manager of accounting, or manager of human resources, or manager of whatever. But there's a big distinction between what actually happens, functionality, with a manager versus a leader. And most leaders have to dip into both of those realms. Most managers have to dip into both of the realms. But if you think about it very simply, you know, you manage things, you manage process, you manage systems, you manage tasks, but you lead people. And, you know, Victoria, it's funny, every time I hear somebody say, well, I manage a staff of 5 people, my first reaction is, and I feel sorry for every one of them, if you're managing them, because people mm-hmm. need to be led. People do not need to be managed. Would you agree?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you know, understanding these terms a little bit better as we've discussed, you know, show content, you know, is that it seems to me that if you've got managers all over the place where you work, then, you know, you're seen as a robot because you're a thing. Managers
yeah.
manage things. If there are no leaders, then everyone's a robot. And I can see
yeah.
why there's 70% disengagement.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. There are some really avant-garde companies. I have a relative who used to work for one. And, you know, the titles on their business cards were so creative. You know, my sister was the guru of whatever it was at the time, you know, in the company that she was working for. They did not have traditional titles because they think
mm-hmm.
when we have these traditional titles, our workforces become more hierarchical. And I think hierarchy is the enemy of engagement. I really do. I think people get so hung up and caught up with ego, and their title is chief this or VP of whatever, and it really doesn't do justice in terms of defining at the end of the day what that person really needs to do to create a great workforce for everybody to come into every day.
Well, that is going to be a topic that we're going to explore in and take a deep dive into in a later show, and that's going to be, you know, the role of ego in workplace roles. I was very happy to see that Mary's card says creative leadership guru. So, you know, definitely you are not using one of those titles that is restrictive, constrictive, and full of ego. You are using a title for yourself in creating your own consulting business that describes a co-creative partnership with the people that you are working with and coaching and consulting with, Mary. So it was kind of fun to read your card when you first handed it to me. But again, you know, people go, oh, well, what does all this mean? Well, words are powerful. Words are very powerful. Words create a self-hypnosis, as a matter of fact. So you are pretty much hypnotizing yourself all day long by the phrasing you're using, the languaging you're using, the way that language is instigating feeling states within you.
Mm-hmm.
If I use a list of words to describe something, and I'm using, you know, work, goal, motivation, output, and then I'm using words like creativity, inspiration, curiosity, innovation. I mean, just anyone, you know, reading that first list of words versus reading that second list of words, you're going to have a constrictive, restrictive feeling in your body associating with the first list of words. The second list of words is going to open you up.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important what language we use, what we call things, what roles are outlined in terms of what a business uses. You know, it might set things on its head for a while, but maybe they're not aligned very well the way they are. So why not shake a few things up and change a few titles, if need be, to help people to engage in a different way in a work role? I even hesitate to use the word work, but it was, you know, it's a word that at least has a broad understanding out there in listener land. So we're going to play around with language in this show, because you're going to see that when you start using different phrasings and words and you refer to things differently, that world starts to change.
Yeah, it does. And you know, as I think about this, I think part of, I guess, the explanation for why we are where we are today could trace back to, you know, I'm thinking of myself, I've been in leadership positions for the past 30 years, meaning I was a supervisor, I had people that directly reported to me. And when I think back about the early days, you know, when I first got out of college and first started working and having people report to me, I have to say that leadership wasn't even something that we talked about. What we talked about was management. And there were, you know, a couple of very well-known management consultants or theorists that espoused management. And it really, I think, hasn't been until more recently, mm-hmm. Victoria, that we've talked about the fact that, again, managing and leading are very different, and we need to be effective at both. And as I think about, you know, we haven't talked yet about definitions, but I'll throw a few out because there's some similarity but yet some differences in these two. You know, Peter Drucker, who, you know, many will recognize that name from back in the day, Peter Drucker defined leadership simply as someone who has followers. And I think that's, you know, that's lovely. That's pretty generic. I'm sure back in the day that made sense. But I think if we're looking for something with a little more structure, John Maxwell, obviously, who I have read and love a lot of Maxwell's teachings, he defines leadership as influence, nothing more, nothing less. But I want to offer another one from someone that probably a lot of people have not heard of. Lisa Cash Hansen is the CEO of Snugwug. And, you know, Victoria, I don't know if you know what a Snugwug is, and maybe some of our listeners do, but it is a neat little arch-shaped pillow that you put over an infant or baby as you're changing their diaper, because instead of, you know, getting into this tug-of-war wrestling contest with a child, you are able to change the diaper more easily because the child is now occupied with what is front-facing on that Snugwug. So that's Lisa's company, which I think is pretty cool. But listen to what she says. She says, leadership is the ability to guide others without force into a direction or decision that leaves them feeling empowered and accomplished.
Yeah, it's a very different feeling definition.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think it's, you know, one of the things, she doesn't come out and say this, but having done a lot of reading of Robert Greenleaf, again, for our listeners, he was really couched as kind of being the father of servant leadership. You know, he wrote a few essays back in the 70s. One was titled The Servant as Leader. And, you know, he kind of coined this phrase of servant leader where, you know, if you believe in traditional leadership, it's really about power. It's power first, whereas servant leadership is really putting other people first. And I think that, like Lisa and Maxwell and others that are, I think, really a little more enlightened in terms of what effective leaders look like today, I think they get that.
Yeah. We're looking at a concept here. It's like, where does a lot of this come from? What's the origin of a lot of the language, a lot of the writing, and is it serving us? And are we now ready for a new groove, so to speak, you know, in the work world, in the way that people are addressed, in the way that people are invited to participate in a work environment, in a co-creative enterprise called a business or a corporation or whatever. We're talking here about, you know, the model, the way that it's been set up for a long time, is a masculinist model. I mean, it is a male energy dominated, and we're not talking sexism here. We're just talking about energies. There's yin and there's yang. There's feminine energy, and that is your receptive side. There is masculine energy, and it is your activated side. And everyone has these, and if you don't think it's important, think about every breath you take has an even feminine and masculine element to it. Because if you can't inhale, you're in trouble. That's the feminine. If you can't sleep, you're in trouble. That's the feminine. There's horizontal and there's vertical. These are two energies that are built into the world as it is, all of life. Now, I'm going to get, you know, kind of big on you, but then I'm going to kind of bring this back down and say this balance is crucial. It is crucial in preserving life, in enhancing life, and it applies to the work world the same way as it does to your every breath. So people who are proposing a more balanced energy, like I believe it, her name is Lisa, the quote that you read, the Snugwug lady?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so Lisa's definition and some of these other people who are defining this a little differently are defining things with a more balance of feminine and masculine energy. This isn't about pushing people around and being a control freak and being a management monster. It's about engaging people at their most amazing level of creativity and participation. And that's inside out, and it's horizontal. It's not nearly so vertical as the old model. And it's not about the carrot on the stick. It's about you shouldn't have to be paid to play. You shouldn't have to be paid to, bribed, rather, to bring out your deepest creativity. And you should be rewarded. And it should be a give and take. Again, it's the in-breath and the out-breath. This is give and receive. So there's a lot of universal principles that are at play here, and if they were actualized in the business and work world, would work a whole lot better than what's going on now, which is so tipped toward the masculine that, frankly, it's falling apart, and we can see it in great numbers when we look at these statistics that Gallup provides for us.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing. There's a wonderful book I'm sure many that are listening have perhaps read or maybe heard of it, but Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. And it's pretty interesting because in the book she mentions that while women are obtaining at least 50% of the undergrad degrees, and get this, 60% of the MBAs women are accounted for receiving, and yet women hold less than 25% of the CEO positions in our companies. Mm-hmm. And I think it's part of what is leading to this imbalance that you're talking about. And, Victoria, I'm going to put a plug in because there's a wonderful new book out called Enlightenment Appetizers by my co-host, Victoria Vitier. It really is a great book. If you're looking for, you know, something to get for that hard-to-buy-for individual this holiday season, it is a great book. It's not a book that you're going to pick up and read cover to cover. You wouldn't want to do it because you would lose the essence of it, but it's a book that you're going to pick up from time to time when you need a little lift, you need a little boost. It's really great. And one of the things that, quite frankly, caused me to start thinking a lot more about this from your book, and I'm hoping you can talk about this for a little bit, it's the difference between the do, have, be state, which again I look at as, and maybe I'm wrong here, but you have a little higher ego when you're functioning with the do, have, be state versus being, doing, and having, which again I look at as a lower ego state, and it's one that is more representative of the serving leader type mindset. Would you agree
Absolutely.
With that, Victoria?
Yeah, I'm going to explain that real quickly, but as we kind of wind down to the end of the show here, we've got about 3 minutes left. What I'm going to do is suggest that maybe our next show talks a little bit more about this. When we're talking about this model, and you can take a look at my book, can be found on my website, and we'll give our websites at the end of the show. But this model is about doing all the right things. You do the right things, you go to the right school, you get the right job, you know the right people, you study the right things, you work real hard, and you're supposed to have the stuff you want, stuff, things, happiness, and then you're supposed to be happy. Well, it doesn't work that way because most of us did the right things. We got stuff, but we're not happy. How does it work, really? Well, the way it really works is that you work from the inside out instead of the outside in. Instead of doing and having and then hoping to be happy, we start out with authenticity. We start out with play, interest, intuition, involvement, curiosity, creativity. We start being, then we do from our being, and then we have abundance and we have joy. So this model is very different. It's an enlightened model. It's a model of actualization. It's not a model of performance the way that it's been taught to us, because as we look at the statistics, the model that's been taught to us is not working. 70% disengagement and billions upon billions of dollars lost every year in GDP and in businesses is not working. So maybe what we do is segue and talk about this on our next show. How about that, Mary?
Hey, I think that's great. And I'm just, if you don't mind, I want to share one quote from your book, because I think this, again, gets to the, hey, if we have any of those CEOs listening in that would love to have a more engaged workforce, listen to this. Turn down the ego so that you will have the eyes to see. I think that's the recipe for the magic formula right there.
And there's a great segue. Mary can be found at, let's get your website. It's on the hot link on our show page. Mary at, give them your address.
Sure. I have two, but I'll just give you the one today. It's www.theleadershipedge.com.
All right, and I can be found at enlightenedlifecoaching.com. We want to hear from you. We're going to do this together. Together, we're all going to transform this into a more enlightened work. We will talk to you next time. Bye-bye, Mary. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, hang on, Mary. I'm going to promote the show. Hold on.
Hey, good job.
Hey, great job. Hang on. I'm sending this out to Twitter. Let's see. Sending it out to Facebook. And I should have done this while we were on the air because... There we go.